So they are very old and very intuitive data structure. They were already published in the 60s, and I think people thought of them even earlier. And the name comes from the word retrieval. So this is why they cut out the middle bit and then they named the data structure like that. So they would have preferred to pronounce, they would have preferred it to be pronounced a tree, like in retrieval, but that's very confusing because then you don't know, is he talking about a tree with a double E or is he talking about a tree with IE? And so by now the standard pronunciation is try. And they are a more specialized data structure. They're a search tree data structure, but it's a search tree that's indexed by lists of characters or bits or whatever you have, and not generic data. So you can't use it to, for example, store real numbers. But if you have anything that's a list of individual items, then you can use that to store it and to retrieve it. And essentially, it's just a tree-shaped deterministic finite automaton. That's all it is. And that fits because lists are, you can think of lists as words, and so it's a data structure that looks like a finite automaton, but no joins, just tree-shaped. And when you search for some item, it's just like accepting a word by a DFA. And so here's a simple example. If you want to encode these five words into a try, this is what the try will look like. And so you can see it's like a DFA that accepts exactly this language here. You start, this is the start node, and with an A and N, you get to this one. This is black because the word N, A-N, is in the language, it is in the tree. And if you just have an A, you could go to here, and it's also black because that A is also part of the language. But if you just find a C, then you go from the start node to there, and it's not black because C is not in the language. So it's really directly a tree-shaped deterministic finite automaton with accepting some accepting nodes that indicate that the string up to that point is part of the search tree. So I think that's pretty intuitive. And we will look at three different actual representations as functional programs. And we will first start out with a very abstract mathematical ones where we use function spaces to represent, well, represent what? The key question here is, how do we represent in each node? Look at this node. We have three successor nodes, and how do we represent the structure of going from a node and a single character, like you are here, and you now look at the character R. How do we continue down here? It's like a mapping that maps each character to a possible successor tree. And there are different ways of representing those mappings, and we will start out with just viewing the mapping as a function that maps each character to one of the successor nodes, or if the character is not, there is no successor with that character. So for example, if you're here and you read a U, then there is no successor, so you also need to take that into account. So this is the data type that we use for that purpose. It has a single constructor, nd, for node. It has a Boolean argument that indicates whether this is an accepting node. And then it has this function that maps. So the data structure of tries is parameterized with a type A, and that's the type of the individual keys or characters, you can think of them. Then in each node, you have here a function that maps each character to an optional subtry. So option, remember, was the data type that had two constructors, sum and none meant there isn't anything here. And so this function, if it maps to none, means that with that character there is no continuation, and if it maps to some try, then you have a subtry. And we need for concise representation, we use the following notation. This I may have introduced already, that's HOL function update notation. If you have a function and you want to update it so that for the argument A, the updated function returns the result B, that's just the same as this lambda expression. So it's again a function that takes an argument X, and if X happens to be equal to A, then you return this updated value B, and otherwise you use the old function F. And there is an even more specialized version where if I write the arrow, it means where really this function is a function to the option type, and I am mapping A to some value now. So this is the generic function notation that works for all functions. This works for all functions to option type, and here you set A to have the value sum B. So now we will implement the abstract data type of sets with the usual operations in terms of this data structure with the help of this notation. Yeah, unsurprising. Well, actually, maybe we start. Maybe it's not so unsurprising. How do we represent the empty tree? The empty set. Sorry, we're talking about sets here. So the only thing we have the constructor node. So clearly, the empty set should be node and then some arguments. So is it a terminal node? No, it isn't, because the tree is empty. There's no word that is, gets accepted. So it will have false here for that the indication whether it's an accepting node. And then we need a function that maps every character to a subtry or to none, but there is nothing below it. So it's just a function that maps everything to none. Yeah. And so this is a notation that's supported by Isabel. If you don't care about the argument of your lambda abstraction, you can just write an underscore there. Next, if you want to search such a try, well, if you are searching for the empty list, then the current node contains exactly the information whether this empty list is acceptable, because B will tell you, is the current node terminal? Then yes, and otherwise no. So you just return B itself. And if you're in a situation where the search string is non-empty, well, then you have to use this mapping, so the mapping to the subtries, and you have to apply the mapping to your key or character K, and then depending if there is no subtry, then you return false, and if there is something, then you recursively search in that subtry with the remainder string X's here. Insert, if you want to insert the empty list, that simply means you make the current node an accepting node, so you set the field here to true and nothing else changes. What if we want to really insert a non-empty list? Sent into the subtries. We have to consult our mapping M, but in the end we want to return a node,
and it'll contain that same B value that's not changed because your key is not empty. And then, well, what do we do in the end? In the end, we want to return a modified version of the M. So we need to use M, but modify it. We modify it at what point? At point X. So, and then we have to figure out, could it be none or some or what? And I have to think about myself, which notation, which of the two update notations we use, is it guaranteed? Yeah, it's guaranteed to be non-empty because we're inserting something. So I think we are safe to use this one. And how do we update it? Then we have to, it would be easy if we could write this insert x's into M of X. So we just look up the subtry and then we insert into that and then we update the X value of our mapping. By the way, there will have to be additional opening parentheses here. Why doesn't this work? What's wrong here?
Yeah. Because the doesn't have already a mapping for X.
Yes, so this might be, I mean, the result here is an option result, but the insert doesn't expect an option, it expects a real try. So we have to make a case distinction first. Case M of X off, and if it's none, then think about myself. Then there isn't anything there, then we have to create a new node. It's very dangerous, just doing it off the top of my head. A new node, which is I think there's something wrong here, let me check. Yes. This is the better one. Insert X is into what? And now we do the case distinction here. Since the mapping might be empty, we have to check whether it is or not. Case M of X of, and if it is none there, then we convert that into the empty try. And if it's not empty, well then fine. If it's some, some T, then we can just use that T. And that should, well, there's some closing parentheses. I hope that's the right one. Yes. And so doing the case distinction first just makes it a bit inconvenient. Of course, you could pull the case out of the insert, but then you would have to do two inserts in each branch. So this is simpler. Deletion, let's look at that one. So, if you want to delete the empty string from a try, then all you need to do is you set the accepting condition to false. And if you want to delete a non-empty one, that's more interesting. And course, the node remains a node with the same B. And then we have to do the deletion in the corresponding subtree. So now it'll again, I think, be an M updated. And now it could even be that we update it with an empty, with a none, because things have disappeared. At least,
I think that's the. Yes. It's doing okay. Here I'm doing it differently. That's a bit more convenient.
Here I'm actually pulling out the case. Why is that better? Because then we don't have to do anything, right? Yeah. So if there isn't anything below, then of course there's no need to delete anything. So if there's none here, then it'll just be as in. Right, then it'll just be the old M. And if there is something there, then you recurse and delete in the subtree. But then you have to update the M. An M with, I guess, X. And it's a. This one, but let's see. Delete the X's from the T. That's what I thought. But that's exactly what's there. Yeah. So this is all very straightforward. There's one disadvantage to this delete function. It doesn't shrink the trie. So that means it can create sequences of nodes where none of them is accepting. So it's like a like a DFA where you have a branch and the branch doesn't contain any final nodes, and in that sense the branch is completely could be just deleted, but it doesn't do that. So we will later on do it. It's not difficult, but here it's simpler to just have these dead branches. How do we show the correctness of this thing? We need an abstraction function. So we need to map the trie to a set, but more precisely a set of lists. And let's think about how to construct this abstraction. Well, if B is set true, then of course that the empty list is in there. So that is the very first thing we can do. If B, then the empty list, else the empty set, union. Of course, most of the information is in the M, not in the B. In the B, you just have one possible accepting word. And now here, the M is a function for that maps every character to some subtree or none. So the best thing to do is to use a union, because we're getting sets out of the abstraction of the subtries, and we take the union over all those sets, and we take the union over all characters A, or I'm saying characters, but of course they can be an arbitrary, they can be from an arbitrary type. And then you apply the A, you apply the map to the A, and depending on what you get, if you get none, which set will that be? Of course, the empty set, there is nothing there, so it's just the empty set. But if you have some try under the character A, then you call the set function recursively. Well, but what do we need to do? We need to also, this gives us all the elements in the subtry, but to get to the subtry, we use the character A. So we need to prefix all of the lists that we get from there with A. And you can write that explicitly. So you can say it's the set of all A hash X's such that X's is element of set T, except you can't write it quite like that, but almost like that in Isabel. But there is, for a functional programmer, there's a much much nicer way of writing it. You would say set of T, and then you would use the image function on sets. So this is a set of lists, and there is the image function that takes a function and applies it to all the elements in the list. So this is the same as the map operator, except the map operator has a list here and a function there, but here we have a set there. And what function is it? It's this function that takes a list and prefixes the list with A. And you apply that to all the lists in the set that's inside T. And this can be written more concisely. You don't need the lambda there. Yeah.
So just hash apply to A?
Yes. Yeah. So it's the, this is the notation for the function that corresponds to the infix operator hash, and that's applied to A. This looks funny because here the A is on the left side, now it appears on the right side, but that's simply because it's the first argument, and if you make it a prefix function, then the first argument appears to the left. If you make it an infix, the first argument appears to the right. That's why it's... So this would be the most concise, or at least shortest description of what's going on there. No invariant there. Everything is really a try. And the correctness theorems are exactly as you would expect them. I mean, they have to be exactly as is. There's nothing especially here. It's just an implementation of sets, so we have to prove exactly those four correctness theorems. And the nice thing is that no lemmas are required. You can just prove them directly. And it's a little bit technical in the sense that you now have to deal with union operations, which you may not have seen before. And so my proof is a bit ugly in that it calls, it uses sledgehammer to dig out some lemmas from the library. But the proof itself is conceptually quite straightforward. It's just a straight induction, that's it.
Now, this is all very well, but this is just a mathematical model because the definition of the data type is very inefficient. We are using a function space inside every constructor, and we're using this pointwise update of the functions, and so that gets translated into a very inefficient code. Essentially, if you look at the definition of the notation here, you can see, if you just look at this function update notation, you can see there's some sequential search going on. If you have multiple updates to a function, and if you then later on want to find out what their value is, it'll just go sequentially through the updates and find the first matching update. So this map notation, this representation of our maps here as functions is mathematically exactly what we want, but computationally it's not a very efficient representation. And so we go forward and look at binary tries and Patricia tries. So what we do now is that, and that's a limitation of the type system, ideally what we would want to write is something like this. We would want to define a data type with a single constructor node with a Boolean, and then something like a try map. So instead of a function space, we would like to say, well, you can use any data type there that's like a map. Except that the type system doesn't allow us to do that. In the type system, you have variables for basic types, but you don't have a variable for a type constructor. This is a type constructor that takes two arguments. So you might want to write something like this and say, this is a function variable on the level of type constructors, but that such a thing doesn't exist in the ML type system, in the HOL type system. You just can't do that. When you define a data type, you really, the only way you can have type variables in there is at the basic level of fixed types, but not at the level of type constructors. And so you really have to plug in a very specific one. And we started by plugging in the function space, from there to there, but ideally we would want to keep it open, but we can't, and therefore what I'm doing now, I'm specializing these tries to binary tries where we're indexing on individual bits. And that makes the presentation very straightforward, we don't have to worry about making it, we just don't worry about genericity, we just fix the index type, and so we're actually fixing that type to be the Booleans, and we're saying we're looking at functions from the Booleans to subtries, and that's essentially we're just looking at pairs. So for every try, you have a pair of subtries, or at most two subtries. And so we will now specialize our representation, and this is the one that we work with, so no longer is there any type argument, because everything is fixed to bit lists, and so it's either a leaf or a node with an acceptance flag and two subtries. So everything becomes much more specialized now, but in principle, what we're doing now also works for arbitrary maps. It's just that the type system doesn't allow us to be as generic as that. Then on these pairs we define two functions. The first one is a selection function that takes a Boolean and a pair and gives us one of the two elements of the pair, and the convention is that false stands for the left element and true stands for the right element. So this is how it's defined. The selection function with a Boolean and a pair. If the Boolean is true, then we get the second argument, so we start with false. And we get the second argument of the pair, and if it's false, we get the first argument. So false, true is the association, the implicit association here. And we also have an update function mod 2 that takes a function from A to A, a boolean, a pair, and gives us a new pair, and applies this function to that pair, or rather applies this function to one of the two parts of the pair, and which one is selected by this boolean argument. So mod 2 with a function, a selection, and a pair. If the selector is true, then we apply the function to the second part of the pair. If it's false, we apply the function to the first part of the pair. So this is just some auxiliary notation. In some sense, this mimics the function space. So this is like if the pair were a function space from booleans to A, then this would just be the application of the function space to that Boolean argument, and this would be the function update notation, where you modify one component of the function and you select by a Boolean which component. So now the empty the empty set is simply represented by leaf, and if you're looking into a leaf, then it's always false. And oops, that's too much. If you're looking into a node with some key sequence, then it depends. If the key sequence is empty, then it's just that acceptance flag. And if it's non-empty, then you select with that key that's at the head of your list. You select from the LR, will always stand for a pair of trees with a left and a right tree. So you select from that subtrie, or from that pair of subtries, you select one of the two with the key K that's at the head of the list, and then you ask yourself, is the remainder here, the X, is that in the subtrie that you've selected? Let's do the insert one with a bit more care. Of course, if you insert the empty list into a leaf, then you get a node that's accepting, but everything below it is just leaves again. You're inserting not into a leaf but into a node. Well, there's not much to do here except that set this flag to true. So it's like here, but you've done it to a node rather than to a leaf. Again, two possibilities if this is not empty. Insert into a leaf. Of course, you have to create a node. Is it accepting? No, because you're continuing further down. And now we can use the mod 2 function . So this is the function that modifies one of the components of a pair. And how does it modify? Well, let's first figure out what's the pair. The pair is just the pair of two empty trees, two leaves.
and the mod 2 function, in which order does it take the arguments? It takes the selector, the x determines which of the two trees we're selecting. The x is a Boolean value, so this would be the selector of the mod 2 function. And what function do we put here? What function do we apply to the subtree selected by x? To insert, and you insert what? You insert the remaining string. So the order of arguments is exactly right. You can just write insert x's here, because insert is a function of two arguments, but if you just give it one argument, it'll just expect one more argument, and that is what mod 2 does. It'll select one of the two parts of the pair and will apply that function to the selected argument. Of course, you could also expand that out. The mod 2 is just a short way of writing, well, if the x is true, then you build a pair where the left part is a leaf and the right part is the insertion of x's into a leaf, and otherwise it's the other way around. It's really just convenience of writing. And finally, if you have a proper node here, then it should work exactly the same. So it'll stay that node with that B, and I suspect this should, I don't know, of course, this is almost the same. I would think this part is the same up to here, and then here it's just the pair LR. Because now you already have something there, and you have to apply the insert function to the right subtree, which is selected by the x. Oops. Yes, that's exactly it.
Deletion. If you delete something from a leaf, the leaf remains. And if you delete it from a node, that's the more interesting one. I would like to discuss that. Here we do the case distinction on the right-hand side for no particular reason. So if you're deleting it from the... If KS is empty, then all you need to do is you need to make this flag here false, and if it's not empty, well, you again build a node with that tag B. and then you apply the delete function recursively to the right subtree of LR. So it's again one of these mod 2 things. Mod 2, which function? The function delete KS prime. And to which subtree do you apply it? To subtree K, and from the pair LR. So it's really quite similar to insert. Now at this point, I would like to think about what can we do about making sure that we shrink the try. So if some subtry becomes empty, there are only non-accepting nodes in there, that we actually shrink it. And for that purpose, I will introduce what's often called a smart constructor, a function that performs the work of a constructor, but it looks at its arguments and does something intelligent. It doesn't just blindly, like here, apply the constructor, but it may also do some optimization work. And so I will introduce a function node, which takes a B and an LR, just like our capital node. But now it won't just apply a node blindly, but it'll say, well, maybe under some conditions I can collapse this down to a leaf. And otherwise, if I can't collapse it, then I will just apply node to B and LR. So under which conditions do you think you can collapse the result down to a leaf? Yes. That's a bit, yes, but that's more complicated than it needs to be, because you can think the whole thing is a recursive process, so you will have done this shrinking already for the subtries. So all you need to check is what for the subtry? If there are leaves already. Yeah. So if it's not accepting and LR is equal to leaf, then you can collapse it down to leaf. And of course the idea in principle is, if you want to be super smart, then you have to go down all the way through LR and see if everything is dead in there. But if you know that the result of this, that the argument here will come from an equally optimized calls to node, then you just need to look one level deep. And now you can simply replace the old ND by the new node, and then it will actually delete everything, or collapse everything down to a leaf that's a non-accepting part of the tree, which part of the tree that doesn't contain any accepting nodes. How do we prove the correctness here? Again, an abstraction function from the tries to sets of lists. And now we take a very easy way. We simply say it's the set of all those lists such that they are in that tree, in that try. So what we're doing, we're reusing an part of the code, because the isIn is really a function that's part of the interface to the set specification, and we're reusing that to define the abstraction function. I will comment on this in a moment. And how do we prove the correctness of the implementation? Essentially because set try is now defined in terms of isIn, so we first prove a lemma about isIn. We prove that if you want to know what happens, if you want to check whether y is in there in a try after insertion, well, either it has to be the thing that you inserted, or it has to be in there already. And if you prove that by induction, it's not hard, it's a straightforward induction, then as a corollary, you get this simply by the definition. If you replace set try here by the list, by this set definition in here, and then and use this lemma here, then this is a direct consequence. So this is a more abstract formulation of the same thing. And similarly for delete, you have to first formulate and prove a lemma about deletion using isIn. So if you check isIn after you delete something, then you can't have what you checked for can't have been deleted, and it must have existed before. And then again, from this lemma, you get this one for almost free. And of course, the one in black, the two lemmas in black here, are the ones that you really need to prove to satisfy the interface specification of sets. But these are the ones that are the core of the proof, because they talk about the recursive function isIn. So the proof is again not difficult, but let me just comment on this idea of using a part of your interface to define the abstraction function. It's nice because it's a trivial definition, you don't need to do much work. Of course, if you compare it to the definition up there here, where we had set of node, the top two lines is much more involved. This can be a bad idea, because if you reuse code, things that are meant to run and run quickly, and use them in a mathematical definition, they may actually complicate the proofs. It's just that isIn is so straightforward, there is no complication there. But in general, don't use functions that are meant to be code in an abstract mathematical setting where you want to simplify proofs. And so if you have a separate abstract mathematical definition, then sometimes the proofs proofs tend to be easy. And this trick here of reusing part of the interface in the abstraction function, you can do the same thing for other abstract data, for example, the map abstract data type. You can also use the lookup function to define the abstraction, because the lookup function is pretty much the abstraction. It turns a tree into a mapping from keys to optional values. So it really, the lookup function is already an abstraction function. So now let's optimize things a bit. This is a situation that can arise if you have normal tries. You can have long branches where there's no branching. This is just a straightforward sequence without any choices anywhere. So it would be nice if we can represent that more compactly. And of course you can, if you invent nodes that contain more information. So you could represent that whole try as a Patricia try, where I don't understand why I have left the C outside. It makes much more sense if I also integrate the C into here. So now the nodes can contain prefixes that are common to all the subtries. So really, think of this part here being integrated here, then you have just a single node with car in it, and then two subtries. And that is a more compact representation because you, you, especially if you think of this being being allocated, each node in there being allocated somewhere on the heap, then this can lead to a lot of cache misses. So it's better to have just one node with these three characters inside that node. So this is the representation of Patricia tries. So everything that's suffixed with a capital P is a Patricia try. It can be either a leaf or it can be a node. And here you have the prefix leading up to that node where there's no branching. And then again, the acceptance condition and a pair of subtries. So it's exactly as you see on that slide here. Here's the sequence and the list of characters, and here the two subtries, and of course there's also in this case an indication that this is not an accepting node. And then the isIn function is quite straightforward. There's nothing in a leaf, and if you look in a node, well, what do we do? This is the prefix, this is the acceptance flag, and these are the subtries. And you want to check whether KS is in there. Let's first take N to be the length of the prefix. And if the prefix is equal to the first N characters of your key, then you're okay, and you can continue. But if the prefix is different from the first n characters of your key, then the result is definitely false, because the prefix has to be, the whole subtree is prefixed with that PS. And so if the first n characters are the same, then if you drop the first n characters of your key sequence and you're left with the empty sequence, well, then you just consult the acceptance condition, and otherwise, you have to continue in your search. So you have one more key and then another key sequence. So you select the right subtree out of your pair LR in here, and then you call isIn recursively with whatever is left of your key sequence, KS prime. Let's see if we can also figure out how to do insertion and deletion. That's a bit more, a bit lengthier. Oops. Yeah, here we are. What we need for the next two operations is a split function that takes two strings, x's and y's, and splits them into three components, namely the longest common prefix, zs, and the remainders, x's prime and y's prime. So if you put z's in front of x's prime, you get x's. If you put z's in front of y's prime, you get y's. And Z is the longest prefix of both X's and Y's. Make sense? Okay, so now we have that function, we can define the insert function. So if you insert into a leaf, well, then you just simply create one node with that key sequence as the prefix, and it's accepting after the key sequence, of course. It's then an accepting node, and there's nothing below. There are just leaves below. if you want to insert a key sequence into a node, then the best thing is first to call the split function. So what you're doing, you're comparing your key sequence with the prefix sequence, and you're trying to find out how much of a prefix, common prefix, does the key sequence and this prefix sequence have. And so let's go through the different possibilities here. Let's first do the simple ones. Yes. Yeah. What's this? What does that mean? That means, great, they have a very long common prefix and then there is nothing left, which essentially means they are the same. And they are identical to QS and So what do we do now, if you want to insert here in this situation? Because you now really have confirmed that exactly that key sequence is in it, which has that prefix and then is finished, and so that B needs to be set to true and the rest stays the same. So what's the next simplest one? I think this one. What do we have here? Here we have that they have a certain prefix, and then the prefix sequence is exhausted, so the prefix sequence is really identical to this QS, and the key sequence is not exhausted. So that means your key is longer than this prefix, but it really agrees with the prefix completely on the length of the prefix. But we need to go further. We need to go further, and where do we need to go? We need to go into the subtree selected from LR by K, and we need to modify that subtree. So it's again a question of mod 2 of LR and the subtree selected by K. And which function? Well, again, the insert function. You apply the insert function to the right component of LR. I mean, right in the sense, the correct component. Insert KS prime. So what about the other way around? If you have something, and here you have the empty list, but there's more prefix. So that means your key was shorter than the prefix sequence.
Yeah, sorry, just a second. Why is the prefix sequence not
true? Sorry, what are you saying?
Why, in the second one? Second
yeah.
Why is the prefix equal to B not true?
You want to set this to true? Why? Because your key sequence is quite long, and so it doesn't change the B value. You continue going through the try, and you're finding that your keys are much longer, so nothing in the middle becomes accepting, your only node becomes only accepting once you get to the end of the key sequence, and you haven't reached the end yet. So this is lengthier because now we have to split the prefix sequence. The prefix sequence said, there's a long prefix and there's no branching in there. But we've now found out that our key sequence is shorter than the prefix sequence, so we now have to introduce some branching in the middle of that prefix sequence. In fact, at that point here, this is, or rather at the point after the QS, right, that's the QS is what is shared between the key sequence and the prefix sequence. So, you see that I get the right position here. See how to best explain this, what's going on here. By the way, this is everywhere, node P, of course. I forgot that we're inside the Patricia tries. So let's start from here. We want to create a node which has first this reduced prefix sequence and then the branching. So how far, what is the reduced prefix that we can still use? Well, that's the longest common prefix between the key sequence and the prefix sequence. This is how much they have in common, is the QS. And so the QS is still a valid prefix. The branching here, the special case, the key is finished at that point. So we have completely exhausted the key. So that means the key ends here after that prefix QS. So what does that mean for the flag, for the acceptance flag? Yeah?
It's true.
It's true because the key has finished. But we now need to still continue with the remaining prefix. So I was wrong in claiming that there's some branching here. There's no branching here. The key sequence is simply a prefix of the prefix sequence. But what we need to do is we need to insert this node because we need to say it's not the whole sequence without any accepting nodes, but there is this one accepting node in the middle of the prefix now. And this is as far as we get, then it becomes accepting, and then, well, now here it's best to do that with an if and else. If P, then we need to, we do need, so there is some branching, yeah. Let me just see where is it. Yeah. If P, then else. So P is part of this prefix that we still have to follow, and P is the first letter, and
But now we need to, we do need to branch on that. And if it's true, then it means we have to put it, the rest of the sequence, into there, and otherwise there, and this is a leaf, and this is a leaf. And what is the T? The T is that I've, the thing that I've constructed here, that's basically the rest of the prefix sequence. So it'll be the PS prime, and I guess false, because everything along the prefix is not accepting. Is that correct? No, it's not. All right, because we're talking about what's behind the prefix sequence. So it's the original B from up there, and the original LR. And I am wondering, why can't I just collapse this? Oh, yeah, 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 okay. No, I understand. We do need a pair here. This, so we have a prefix, and then we have an accepting node, and the rest must be a pair. And so we have to branch on something, and so of course we branch on that first character of the remainder of the prefix. So, although you may think of it, well, that's just what you have, the situation that you have is you have some key sequence, and then you have the prefix sequence, which is the same as the key sequence up to here. So this is our QS. And then you have a P and a PS prime. So this is the situation, how you split it up. How it's split up. And so you may think, why can't we just split it into this and all of this? But we need the first character here, because otherwise we don't get the pair, we can't create a pair here. We can't just write node. I mean, you might morally think, why don't we write at this point here node P of P hash PS prime and B and LR or something like that. But that just doesn't, from the type perspective, it doesn't work. You have to have a pair here in the last component of the node P. And you can't just have another node P there. And there's just one case remaining, namely, that's the case where there's also a bit of the key remaining. So you have something like this, you have then a key, and then another key sequence prime, and they have a certain prefix, but then there's both a prefix left and a key left. And so now it's similar to this case, but more complicated. So it should be something like this. We have a prefix of the two things, and that's what we start with. Node QS. But then, what should go as a flag here? Here the key ended, but here the key didn't end.
We're creating some new branch there in the middle of the prefix and in the middle of the key, and so this is not accepting. And then we again have something like this. If P, then, and we have two key trees now, let's call them TP. That's the tree that corresponds to the remainder of the prefix, and TK, that's the tree that corresponds to the remainder of the key, and otherwise it's the other way around. And we're using the P here, and then I think it's the wrong way around. If P is true, then the TP should be in the second component. So let's make it a K. We branch on the K. We know they must be different because they are both, I mean, they are not, they don't have a common prefix anymore, so K and P must be just the opposite of each other. And so we branch on K, and if K is true, then the subtree with a with a key sequence in it, it goes into the second part of the pair. So let's figure that out. What is TK and TP? Let's first take TP, that's easier. So that's the remainder of this part here. So it's essentially just the PS prime, because we are already consuming one character in this branch here. So it's PS prime, and then it's simply what we had initially, B and LR. And TK is similar, but now it's the remainder of the key sequence as a prefix. And then we get to the end of the key sequence, so now this node is accepting. And is it just leaf, or am I too naive here? Yeah, it's just two leaves. Yeah. So this is the act of splitting your long prefix into two parts. So you have the common prefix, the QS, and then you have your branch on K or P, and then you have in one direction, you have the key sequence, the remainder, and in the other direction you have the prefix sequence, the remainder, and in one case you really stop there, the key sequence stops there, and here you have the subtree LR hanging off at the end of the branch. So essentially, this is what it looked like before you did anything. You had one long sequence, and now you have a key sequence that goes as far as this and then branches off. And so you're now splitting the prefix into two parts, one that leads up to that branch, and then the remainder that leads up to the original. And sorry, what? Yeah, this is the insert. And delete. I don't know, go through all the cases in delete. It turns out it's actually simpler than insert, just by the amount of code that you need to write. And now, how do we prove the Patricia try is correct?
That's an example of stepwise data refinement or stepwise implementation. Logically, we want to show that the Patricia tries represent sets. That's always our goal. But we, instead of doing that directly, we show that the Patricia tries implement tries, and then by composition they also implement sets. And so this is the hierarchy of types that we have. On the abstract level, what we're implementing is a set of Boolean lists. Here is the first level of the implementation, the tries. This was our abstraction function. This is the second level, more compact representation, that instead of using going from here to pool list all the way, we just go one step to try with an abstraction function, which I just call abstract P. And so that usually simplifies the implementation proofs a lot. And in fact, if you have a complicated implementation, it helps to split your implementation into a number of steps and not go. We could have started directly with Patricia tries, but then the correctness proof of those would have been much more complicated. This two-step process is much simpler.
So it's a modular correctness proof where we have already part of the way has already been achieved up here, and we just have to bridge this smaller gap. And so how do we find the abstraction function for the Patricia tries? Well, this one is just we just define it as a recursive function, which maps a Patricia try into a try, and a leaf is mapped to a leaf. And what do we do with the node with some prefix sequence and then our subtries? Well, the Patricia node is mapped to a normal node. The B is just transferred. The abstraction function that we're defining is applied recursively to the two subtrees L and R. And then we still need to do something with this prefix. And so there's the auxiliary function prefix try that simply takes a sequence of bits and puts a whole sequence of nodes in front of this node. And the nodes have, each one has the has one bit from this bit sequence in it. So there's a function prefix try, which I'm not showing you, that takes a Boolean list, a try, and gives you back a try, which has this additional sequence of tries in front of it. So this is the longer one, this is the shorter one, and you extend the shorter one by this bool list and just create a sequence of nodes in front of it. And then first you prove the correctness of Patricia tries with respect to tries. And these are the three things that you have to prove. There's something about emptiness, but we ignore that. The empty one. You have to show that the isIn function of the Patricia tries is the same as the isIn function on the tries composed with the abstraction function. So it's the usual game that you have to show that the more concrete functions behave the same as the more abstract functions, but now the abstract functions are not directly the set functions, but they are the functions on the Patricia on the try level. So isIn behaves like isIn P behaves like isIn, insert P under abstraction behaves like insert, delete P under abstraction behaves like delete on try. So these are the three things that you have to prove. And it's not quite direct. So there's a whole sequence of about 10 lemmas. None of these are terribly difficult, but figuring them all out does take a certain amount of time, and I certainly don't want to go into the proofs. There's nothing special about the proofs. The only difficulty is really finding all of these lemmas. And then they implied these main theorems. And now you can take one step further. You can prove the correctness of try P with respect to the sets, the set level. by simply defining an abstraction function, which is the composition of first your one step from the Patricia tries up to the tries, and then the second step from the tries up to the set level. And then the overall correctness is really just a trivial composition of the correctness theorems for both levels. So here, for example, this is for the insert, the correctness theorem that connects the this is what we need to show for the Patricia tries, that they implement, that the insert function is implemented correctly. This is the property you need to show, and you show it by directly combining the two properties that you have shown for the insert function on Patricia tries and the insert function on normal tries, and this is simply a little a direct consequence. And this is really the end of all I wanted to say today. I guess there's no conclusion here. It's an example of a differently organized search tree that works quite efficiently, and in particular space efficiently, if you are indexing your sets or your maps with long lists, that's a very convenient choice. If the code is simple, the proofs aren't difficult, but there are optimizations that are interesting, like the Patricia tries. Yep. So, unless you have any more questions, this is really the end for today, and next time we will go into, as you can see, a long list of different ways of representing priority queues. Thank you.